Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some useful nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, no matter how contrary that might seem, just like this nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the practical alchemist, delighted as ever to have you with me today as I discuss well-being and fitness, happiness and exercise, seasonal affective disorder or SAD, SAD, and cold water therapy with health and wellness leader and celebrity trainer Chris Wharton. Now, Chris is also known as a happiness fundamentalist. He's a global speaker on happiness and mental well-being, and he's one of the founders of a well-being and fitness retreat centre in sunny Spain. He also suffers from SAD, SAD, so that sunshine is really important to him. Did you know that 2 million people in the UK are diagnosed with SAD each year? And it can be really crippling for some. Chris is now recognised as one of the world's leading health and fitness experts who's helped a host of celebrity clients, as well as more ordinary people, use exercise to live longer and happier lives. I started off our chat by asking Chris what got him into the world of well-being in the first place.
I've been doing this for as long as I can remember. When I was at school, I had no real huge interest in anything other than fitness, exercise, sport. And so it was a very natural progression for me to move into this as an industry. My parents were always very supportive of me just doing what I enjoyed. And I'm a big advocate of that today in every aspect of our lives. And yeah, I just sort of fell into it as an industry, to be honest. I couldn't think, and I still cannot think of anything that I'd rather be doing. So I think when we're younger, like certainly in our teens, and we're sort of pigeonholed towards certain professions or expertise or classes to take, you know, I was a very young teenager, and so a very immature teenager as well, and still am to a degree. And so for me, it was really, what do I like doing? I'll do more of it. And yeah. I think it's a bit of an issue in the education system in that we're asked to make these big decisions about our lives and careers and where we want to end up at a very young age. I think for men in particular, it's a difficult decision to be making as an 18-year-old. And so at that age, I decided I wanted to go to university to study a sports science degree because I loved sport. And it's turned out for the good, to be honest. I mean, even when I was at university, I wasn't a hugely conscientious student. I would party way too much, socialize way too much. I wouldn't concentrate enough. But I still enjoyed that as a topic, and I think it's more of a passion for me, and it's obviously led towards a career that's worked out for the best. I don't think I'd be any good at anything else.
I know what you mean. Yeah, exactly. I mean, not that you wouldn't be any good at anything else, but I feel the same way sometimes. And then, you know, you've gone on to do some great stuff and you're a TEDx speaker now. And your TEDx talk is the happiness paradox, or the exercise happiness paradox, isn't it? So you kind of also broaden things out into mental health and well-being. You are talking about general fitness and well-being. So how did all that come about? And we'll talk about the happiness paradox as well.
So post-university, I ended up sort of co-founding a fitness business and spent the next 13 years owning and operating some gyms in the UK. And they did really well and were very popular. We ended up getting 95% of our clients walking through the door wanting to change the way that they looked. So people came in almost exclusively to lose fat, to get a six pack, to get in shape for their wedding, holiday, whatever it may be. And as just a general observation over the years, I noticed that people were almost exclusively looking for a very quick fix when it came to their certainly when it came to their physique, but when it came to their health as well, everyone wanted a result.
Yeah. Yeah.
Transformation, a 6-week program. People yeah. wanted results quickly. And we were able to provide that to a degree. Changing your physique is no more complicated, and it's very nuanced, but it's no more complicated than creating a big calorie deficit over time. So you burn more calories than you consume, you lose body fat. The opposite applies if you want to build lean tissue. And so when people came in, it was our job to help them to achieve X goal. So they wanted to lose 3 stone by this date, and that was our primary job. And that was our business model. But what I found over time was that when people achieved their goal, again, they were almost exclusively not happy with it. So they would get the 3 stone fat loss and they would still not be happy. And they would want to lose another stone or change another part of their body, get a bigger bum, skinnier thighs, more toned arms, whatever it may be. And I guess my observation over time was, if this is not making us happy, why are we doing it? And so the exercise happiness paradox was sort of born out of this concept that people have become far too concerned with the way that they look and not enough with the way that they feel.
Mm.
And
yeah.
And I don't think it's a zero sum game. I don't think, you know, you in order to have a 6-pack, you must be miserable. But but no. there is some truth to that, you know, and I've experienced that myself in the past when I've got down to very low body fat percentages or done photo shoots and things like that. And I talk about this in the TED talk, that when I have been at that point and when I have restricted myself to that degree with this higher goal of looking a certain way, the process has been a miserable one.
Mm.
And at the outcome, I certainly wasn't any happier. And on top of that, when we get down to these very specific physique goals, they're quite often fleeting. So we don't, you know, when you see people on the covers of magazines and in the press and on Instagram, and they're looking super lean or in incredible shape in their bikinis on holiday, very often that is a snapshot in time. And the effort and time that has gone into achieving that, in my opinion, is nowhere near worth the reward.
Yeah.
And so I guess the overarching message from the exercise paradox is we need to start focusing on trying to improve the way that we feel as our primary goal. And if we can carve in certain principles and habits to help us improve our brain chemistry, our energy levels, our sleep, our stress, our concentration, then the carryover from that is very often an improved physique anyway. So from my perspective, the most efficient way of achieving a certain physique goal that is long lasting is by focusing on enjoying the process, finding something that you love doing, doing more of it, treating it as a marathon, not sprint, and mm-hmm. living those principles rather than looking for this very quick fix transformation.
And I think that feeling state is so overlooked.
Yeah, I think also just in terms of the way that we feel when we try and do something very quickly, it's just a bit miserable. Like you'll be yeah. very low energy. You'll find it very hard to concentrate. Your sleep will be all over the place. You'll feel hungry all the time. You feel like you're missing out. Mm. And quite frankly, you will be missing out. Because in order to achieve very low body fat percentages or very quick, significant changes in your physique, it's not a lot of fun.
No.
And so there's that side of it. The other side is, you know, no one wants to achieve a change in the way that they look for a day. Yeah, so we're all doing this because we want something permanent or certainly
yeah.
the lasting.
Yeah.
And really the I would say absolute only way of doing that is by habit change and improving the way that you look after yourself forever. So we spoke about this the last time we talked, and that is there's so much misinformation about nutrition, exercise, and every sort of aspect of health. And it's very hard to see the woods for the trees a lot.
Very
of the
hard.
Time.
Yeah.
If you're not that well versed in this industry, or you're just starting exercise, or you've just sort of built up the motivation and courage to go and do a class or start at the gym. Any sort of first step on that journey is always going to be difficult, let alone when you're getting sort of battered with all this different misinformation. And so what ends up happening is people will try one diet or they'll try one type of exercise. It might work for a few weeks, or they might get a small incremental change in their physique, or they might hate the exercise, or it might find it too difficult. They might get injured. What ends up happening is we yo-yo between things that we are told that work and then the things that don't work, or things that we don't like and that we do like. And so it ends up being very off-putting for people.
Yeah.
And ultimately they don't end up sticking to it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, how long do we then take before we build up that motivation and courage to start again and try something else? And so I guess what I always try and encourage people to do is, firstly, don't jump straight into the deep end. Start slowly, try a variety of different exercises, stick to the fundamental principles of nutrition that we know that work, and treat it as a forever game. You know, when advising people about their nutrition and their exercise for that matter, I always try and say to people to try and find something that you think you could stick to forever. Mm. And I know that seems incredibly daunting, especially when it comes to nutrition, but I'm not saying we should be restricting ourselves forever. I'm saying when it comes to food choices and we're sort of creating a nutrition plan, those food choices should be the foods that you at least half like eating.
I was just going to say, I mean, there's no point in doing it if you're constantly feeding yourself with things that you don't actually like.
Yeah. Well, also you may be able to stick to it for some time and you may get a partial result. But like I say, it's just not going to last.
No.
And that's so disheartening for people. And I've seen it happen time and time again where, you know, it doesn't end well for people and they never stick to it. And that's quite heartbreaking, especially when people are putting in so much time and effort and when it means so much to people and they've struggled for so long.
Absolutely. And so what I'm hearing from you is that, yes, you go for a long game. So you've got to find ways of exercising that you enjoy, work out some kind of nutrition plan or not a nutrition plan, but just work out what you like eating that might be healthier for you and stick to that. I mean, how rigid do we have to be? We don't have to be that rigid, do we? It depends on, I guess, what we want to achieve.
Yeah, I think the very first step is sort of figuring out what you're actually doing this for.
Yeah.
Because like I said a few minutes ago, I think we misunderstand what our actual goals are at times. And quite often when we achieve certain physique goals, especially, we're not any happier than we were when we started. You know, there's no getting around the fact that there is a huge percentage of the population of people in the UK that need to lose weight and need to get fitter. And that is just a harsh truth. But the principles of fat loss for those people and for everyone else remain the same. And that is we need to create an incremental compounding daily calorie deficit, i.e. we need to burn off more calories than we consume. Like I said, we should be doing this incrementally and we should be doing this slowly if we have any chance at trying to keep that body fat off. So in terms of how rigidly do we need to stick to it, I think very rigidly, as long as the goals that we set are achievable.
Okay, yeah. Them.
You know, if you were to, say, want to create a daily calorie deficit of 1,500 calories every day to achieve a certain fat loss goal, you're not going to be able to stick to that, certainly for not any significant length of time. And so, sure, you may lose some fat in a week or 10 days that you can stick to it, but you're not going to be able to rigidly stick to an unrealistic goal. So I think people just need to be like, whatever stage you are in your health and fitness journey, just try and be a little kinder to yourself and don't beat yourself up about the place that you're in right now, because there have been millions of people in the same place and we know for a fact that it works, but it's just about finding something that you can maintain over time. Everyone's looking at this ideal standard of beauty and attractiveness and these super lean cover models or celebrities in magazines. And it's so difficult for us not to compare, this upward social comparison where we look at other people. And it doesn't just apply to body image. You know, we're looking at other people going, I wish I had his bank account.
Yeah.
I had legs like hers, or I wish I drove a car like his. You know, it's so difficult not to upwardly social compare, especially with social media, because we're only seeing people's highlight reels. And so we're not seeing the bits where they're crying their eyes out, or they're struggling to stick to their diet, or they didn't go to the gym that day, they missed a business deal, whatever it might be. We don't see these things. And so I think it's just human nature for us to say, I want to look more like that, because that is what we're defining as successful.
Yeah. How do we steer clear of that, though? Because social media is ubiquitous everywhere you look. So do you suggest to people that they have a bit of a fast from social media and media generally?
I would, but I think I'd be a bit hypocritical if I did. not only do I spend a fair amount, more time than I'd like on social media.
Yeah, I think we all do.
I also upwardly socially project. So I put on photos, you know, I just think it's human nature. If someone shows me a photo and I don't like it, there's no chance I'm putting it on my social media. And so I don't think it's the fault of individuals for projecting themselves in a certain way. I think we've just got to try, and this is easier said than done, I think we've got to try and just remain mindful when we're spending time on social media that that's not the full picture. I haven't figured out a way to do this consistently yet, but if you can fast from social media at times, I certainly don't think it would be bad for your mental health. But like I say, I find that quite difficult.
Yeah, Chris and I both, it can be almost impossible to take a break from it, I find. Not so with our conversation now, though, as we take time to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back with more from Chris after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest, Chris Wharton, one of the world's leading well-being and fitness experts. Now, Chris continued to talk about something I'm also a big fan of, and that is the practice of gratitude.
The other thing I think, and this has genuinely changed my life, is the practice of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was a bit reluctant to start writing down things I was happy for in a journal each day. And I don't know why, because it's changed my life, like I say. And if we look at the science behind practicing gratitude, it's concrete. We know that it works. It's very difficult to experience negative emotions when we're thinking about things that we're grateful
for.
From that perspective, it just changes your mindset. And when we start compounding this practice of gratitude over time, and the listeners will feel this experience if you start doing this regularly, your brain starts to become on the lookout for things to add to your journal in the next day. And the very practice of that leads to you opening your eyes to more positive experiences. You're thinking about ways to add gratitude, carve gratitude into your life.
Yeah.
And then you experience more of that. And, you know, it's human nature that we are always on the lookout for threats. You know, thousands of years ago, it kept us alive. You know, you know, our ancestors who just laid around on a jungle canopy or in a desert, like in the Sahara, we'll cut that bit.
We'll leave that in.
they wouldn't have survived, you know. So we were always on the lookout for threats and danger. And just human nature now has changed. You know, we're so much more comfortable now, but our brains are wired to still be on the lookouts for the negative, much more heavily so than the positive. Yeah. And, you know, I think, and I don't quote me on this, but I think we need to try and experience, I think it's either 4 or 7 to 1 ratio of positive to negative to shift our mind towards being in a happier state.
Yeah.
No, go on. I can't remember what my initial point was, but it was,
well, you were saying that you were resisting. You were resisting a journal, a gratitude journal, and I understand that. And it's something that I dip in and out of and have done throughout my life. Sometimes I really go for it, and then it sort of tails off. And funnily enough, I have just recently started again, doing a daily gratitude practice because I'd let it lapse. There's something in me, I just suddenly realized one day that why wasn't I doing it? And why wasn't I doing it? Because I know that it does bring huge benefits, right? And that gratitude in your life, it really does make a positive impact. It's huge. It's
profound.
Yeah.
And I think when I first started as well, and in fact, I still do this now, if you were to look at my gratitude journal, you would without a doubt laugh. And people would think it's just way too simplistic to actually work. I use an app, which I'm happy to send you the link to. It's called Gratitude. It's a free app. And you just type in 3 things per day that you are grateful for.
All right.
And mine would be like ridiculously simple, like I'm grateful for my dog or something along those lines. I am very grateful. In fact, he's in there a lot. but I don't think it, certainly to begin with, it doesn't need to be any more complex than that. You know, it is just shifting our mindset towards being on the lookout for positive things. And I think going back to my original point is maybe if we can replace some of this upward social comparison that we experience by spending our time on social media with journaling our gratitude, you know, they're both done on the same device, then maybe we can start experiencing just a better overall feeling of contentment. And then perhaps we won't be as jealous about these sort of digital facades.
Well, getting back to the feeling state, I don't know about you, but I can feel the difference. You can actually feel in your body the difference when you are acknowledging what you're grateful for to when you're thinking, oh, I want that, or, you know, oh, I wish I had, or, oh, you know, I'm worried about. It's a very different feeling state, and it's a much more resourceful feeling state, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and like anything else that we have talked about so far or will talk about, it's about creating a habit.
Yeah.
And we call these slight edge principles. There's a very good book. Again, I'll send you a link. Jeff Olson, I think, is the author. And it talks about these slight edge principles that done for one day, one time, will make zero impact on your life.
Yeah.
But done as a compounding habit, over time will have a profound upward curve change to many different aspects of your life. And I think that applies not only to the practice of gratitude, but to every other health and happiness hack that I've ever advised people on. You know, I don't expect people to exercise once and then, although, we do know this effect of endorphin and change in brain chemistry, we can acutely feel that. But I don't expect people to have one session of exercise and then be hooked and want to do it forever, you know, every day forever.
Yeah. So creating habits, right? Getting back to creating habits. We know that it's something that we have to build up to. It's like a muscle that we have to exercise daily, and then we get into the habit. Then it becomes a second nature. But for those people who are like you were, and I probably was many years ago when people started talking to me about keeping a gratitude journal, for those people who are resistant to starting off, what are the things that you would suggest to those people to get them over that, bump in the road, right? Between them being, oh, yeah, well, that's a bit silly, that, oh, you know, but, you know, whatever, to them saying, okay, I'll give it a go.
I think initially, it's just so important that we understand quite how crucial our well-being practices are to the quality and length of our life.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
So when we talk about habit change in general, the first and most important thing is to understand just how important it is. Mm-hmm. And I think to understand how important it is, not just from your own perspective, but for the people around you. So your family, your spouse, your colleagues, you know, if you're turning up each day and you're suboptimal, you're tired, you're grumpy, you're exhausted, you're stressed, you haven't slept well, not only are you doing yourself a massive disservice, but it's a pretty selfish way to live, because it's going to have a huge impact on everyone around you. And so if you can't try doing these things for yourself, then do them for the ones that you love. You know, that's the reason why I turn up and do these things every day, you know, because I'm miserable to be around if I don't, basically.
Well, that's fair enough. That's very honest of you to say that.
The second thing I would say is to start very, very small.
Mm.
So I'd never suggest to people to just upturn their lives and completely change their routine.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to try and do is start carving in some of these routines over time. So again, treating this as a marathon, not sprint, how can we affect the trajectory of our mood each day through a small, simple habit change? And, you know, I talk a lot about morning routines, and we've spoken about this in the past. Yeah. My morning routine is exactly the same every single day. And this hasn't happened forever. I've only just, I'd say in the last 18 months, have sort of refined this to the time that I spend in the morning. But it is a non-negotiable priority. You know, I have to do it, and I do it every single day, whatever is happening. But importantly for me is it's 12 minutes long.
Mm.
Right? And because I've always struggled with quite severe ADHD. I can't concentrate on anything for an extended period of time. And so to tell me to do a 30 plus minute morning routine, I just wouldn't have the patience for it. And so I suspect that is the same for nearly everyone, regardless of ADHD or not.
Yeah. It's just
more so for people that are, and I guess these are the people that need it most, are the ones that are so time poor that they haven't got time to look after themselves.
Mm,
Because, you know, I understand that, and I've worked with extremely busy people for my whole career, and I get it. I understand that time is very precious and a commodity. But it's not about not having time. It's about not prioritizing. And yeah. I think that there is just such a hugely profound benefit in every aspect of your life by carving in 12 minutes a day to focus on your morning routine.
Oh, right. And who can't find 12 minutes in a day? You know, 12 minutes and 24 hours, please.
Yeah.
We can all find that. And what I'm dying to ask you is, what is your morning routine? Are you happy to share it? Are you happy to share it with us?
Yeah, of course. And so, look, but before I do, I'm always mindful about when I talk about any habit change or carving in any routines that this is so subjective. Everyone yes. has a different life. And, you know, most of my close friends have very young children, and those wrecking balls make things a hell of a lot
of
more
course.
Difficult. Yeah. Specifically when it comes to sort of this sleep and early morning routines. But let's just assume that everyone can carve out 12 minutes at some point in their day. So I always do this first thing in the morning. I find that for most people, it's easiest to carve out first thing in the morning because everyone else is still asleep. You've got no work commitments. And so, yeah, my advice would be do this as early as possible. And again, this depends on what part of the world you're in, but my routine will consist of morning sunlight, cold therapy, some form of exercise, and gratitude journaling. And I will try where possible to merge them into one experience. So at the moment I'm out in Florida, and it gets a lot lighter, a lot earlier here, and there is a lot more sunlight. And so very first thing in the morning, I will head out. We've got a sort of little plunge pool here, and I'll get in the plunge pool as the very first thing that I do. And so this cold water, deliberate cold water exposure. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners will have started hearing a hell of a lot more about deliberate. And I know you're.
They've heard it from me.
Yeah. You know, and make no mistake, there is a reason for that, and that is that the literature that's being published around deliberate cold water therapy is exceptional, and there is a lot of it, and we know factually that this makes a huge difference to many aspects of our well-being. And so I think for me, this has been the most life-changing of habits that I've introduced into my routine in the last decade. So I'm a huge fan of this cold water immersion.
Yeah.
And so I'll do that very first thing before I've had time to speak myself out of it. I wake up as soon as I open my eyes, I walk outside, get straight into the plunge pool. Now, luckily for us, as it stands, there is a lot of sunlight and daylight. And so whilst I'm in the pool, which I spend between sort of 3 to 4 minutes in, I will look directly towards the sun. Now, I don't suggest looking at the sun directly for any extended periods of time, but just to the side of the sun. It's very important that we get that direct daylight exposure into our eyes. And this is important to do without sunglasses on. I do this without sunscreen on. And that first thing, morning sunlight, is the first real dopamine kick we get for the day. It wakes us up in an incredibly acute fashion alongside that cold water exposure. And the difference between getting in and out of that pool in 4 minutes is night and day, literally night and day. And so I find it when I didn't do that, I would always find it very difficult to wake up. And I felt that the first hour of my day was, it was just essential that I had caffeine. Otherwise, I'd just feel like I wanted to go back to sleep. And so, first 4 minutes, direct sunlight exposure and plunge pool.
Mm-hmm.
I'll then jump out of that while still looking towards that daylight. I'll then perform some kind of bodyweight exercise routine. So for me this morning, I did a set of bodyweight squats, some press ups, some front planks, some alternate lunges. And then I just repeated that 3 times. It took me like 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're not looking for here is to elicit any kind of huge physiological change. You can't do that in 4 minutes. Physique change. You can't do that in 4 minutes. There's not enough volume. There's not enough load. What we're actually looking for is just to change our brain chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we can do that very easily with short periods of intense exercise. So I try and do that quite quickly without much rest so that I feel at least a little bit breathless. At times certainly when I'm in the UK, I'll do this the other way around because it's less savage getting in the cold.
Yes.
With the exercise. And so once I've done that, then I'll come straight inside and then I'll spend literally 2 minutes doing this gratitude journal. And that is it. I'll bracket that usually with 2 glasses of cold water.
Mm-hmm.
Other than hydrating, which, you know, we wake up slightly dehydrated. But other than that, there's no real science that I'm aware of that makes that a good practice. But I just think
your hydration is good.
In the UK are just chronically dehydrated anyway. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the easiest hack for our health that there is, which is just to drink more water. I'll plunge, sunlight, exercise, gratitude. And that is honestly no longer than 10, 12 minutes.
Yeah, I think most of us can find 12 minutes in a day, don't you? And I know any time of the day will work, but honestly, I do find that if I don't do something in the morning, I never quite get round to it later in the day. Too many distractions. Well, we'll have more from Chris Wharton in a minute. But right now, it's time for another break to hear from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Alchemy 101 and we're back with more from Chris Wharton. I love getting the morning sunlight, just as Chris does, but I have to admit that it's not as easy getting sunlight on my morning swims here in Scotland, where I live, in the middle of winter. It's still fairly dark when I'm heading down to the sea.
There's a couple of things that I guess are worth sort of elaborating on a little bit when it comes to that routine, and that is the cold water and the sunlight. So if you've never done deliberate cold water immersion and you live in the UK, do not jump in the sea.
I meet people on the way and they say, oh, you know, I'd love to do it. And I say, well, don't start now. Start right now.
it's really difficult and potentially quite dangerous. So I think we're going to start with any kind of deliberate cold water exposure, and you're in the UK, do it in the shower.
So
this was how I built up to having this as a habit that I weirdly, and I'm sure you agree, look forward to in the morning, is I would, because I hated it for many months when I first started it. And the only reason I did it was because I'd spent so much time reading the research and I knew how much it worked. And anyone who's experienced deliberate cold water exposure knows that sense of euphoria you feel at the end.
That's
the addictive part of it. I think for me anyway, is that I just know how good I'll feel when I finish. But I found it very difficult for months on end to just deliberately do it to myself. And I think actually at times in the shower, because you're having to turn that knob to cold, it is actually a bit harder than just diving in. But
in terms of
physiological harshness, I would say it's easier to do it in the shower. So jump into a warm shower and then a few minutes from the end, turn it to cold, scream for 30 seconds, and then 30 to 60 seconds, and then turn it back to warm to finish. And then try to gradually build that up. You know, we know from the data that anything between 1 and 4 minutes seems to be optimal. So I think, if you can stomach 60 seconds and then gradually start building on that in the UK, that will work very, very well. And we'll have a very similar, dare I say it, not quite as acute response, but, you know, I found that it worked very well for me, given the resources that I had at the time. And so definitely, if you haven't tried that and you're listening now, please try this tomorrow, because I honestly think, and I've been doing this for nearly 18 years now, I honestly think that is the quickest and most cost-effective, resourceful way that you can change your mood in an instant.
That's the brilliant thing, isn't it? It doesn't cost any money.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, the energy crisis now at home.
A cold shower doesn't cost anything, does it?
True. Very little. And the other thing is the light exposure. Obviously, if you've got a normal job or you've got young children at home, it's highly unlikely that you're able to sleep in until it gets light outside in the UK right now.
Yeah.
So the way to counter that is to invest in a light lamp, like a light lamp. So you can get these on Amazon or any other retailer, and they're very cost effective. You know, I think I got mine for like dollars. For about £40. You can probably get them even cheaper than that. But essentially they are lamps that mimic natural sunlight. And so my advice for people at home, certainly through these winter months, and, you know, we touched on SAD and I'm happy to talk about that. My advice is to make that a priority and make that investment, because that direct light exposure from the lamps that replicate sunlight is pretty much the same, probably not quite as effective, but it definitely will make a huge difference. So first thing in the morning, turn that light on, whether it's at your desk, by the side of your bed, whilst you're exercising, whilst you're in the shower, get some direct light exposure into your eyes, and it will have a similar effect. So the morning routine, it is doable at home. It's doable anyway. I mean, ultimately, it has to be something that we can practically apply all year round. Otherwise, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, correct. And so, you know, at the moment for me, I'm actually finding I'm missing seeing that morning sunlight. I'm missing seeing the sunrise. I'm missing seeing the early morning light. And of course, that early morning light, hitting your eyes it does impact you profoundly. It helps you with your sleep patterns, those rhythms of your being during the day and night. And so, yeah, I've noticed it as it's got really, you know, darker in the mornings that I miss it. But I also said to somebody the other morning, it was -2 at the time Celsius when we were going in for a swim. And I said, I hadn't done it for a couple of days because of various issues that meant I couldn't, you know, get down in the morning. And as you say, it's harder to do something later in the day. And also it was -5 the other day. And I don't want to go swimming in the sea when it's -5 on my own, right? Because I don't think that that's safe. So I'd missed it for a couple of days. And I said to somebody who was there the other morning, yeah, I've missed this. And she said, are you sure? I said, yeah, I actually am. Yeah, I have actually missed it, even though it's freezing.
Can I ask you a question, JJ? Mm. Have you found that as time went on that you found it much more easy to manage? That
yes,
when you got into that cold, it didn't feel as cold.
Yes,
subjectively.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
I've noticed that recently. That this morning, in particular, when I jumped in, it didn't feel cold anymore. And I feel like I might have just got over that sort of barrier. I hadn't been doing it for a huge amount of time. And it just didn't feel as harsh. I guess we know this is a physiological change. We adapt to a stress a lot. And But I think it's like amazing to be doing it in the sea. I don't think I could hack that.
No, well, like you see, I'm not really very good at doing it in the shower. I can't bear the idea of turning on the cold in the shower, but I don't. There's something to do with being in nature and being down there. And actually the social aspect is really important as well, and it's really important for mental health as well.
Do you jump straight in, or do you sort of walk
in? I walk in.
Yeah
Other people jump straight in. I just think that it's a little bit more dangerous, especially if it's really cold, and I think it's better to walk in and just breathe as you're walking in and feel your way into it. In fact, I think that it's great if you can jump in, and I think people a lot younger than me can probably do that more easily than me, right? I just am aware that I'm a certain age, and I don't really want to give myself that much of a shock by jumping in and, you know, total immersion right away. But I can certainly stay in a bit longer than I used to be able to. And in fact, my regular swimming buddy said to me the other day, you've obviously hardened up a lot, you know, because she was ready to get out. And I said, oh, no, I could do a little bit more. Now, that's not to be confused with when you are in the early stages of hypothermia and thinking you could stay in longer, right?
In your mind.
Yeah, we're not talking about that. But I could have, you know, I can stay in a bit longer now because I am accustomed to it. Yeah. And I never thought I would be. Honestly, I was one of those people who vowed many, many years ago that I would never, ever swim off the coast of Britain ever again in my life.
And well, I think there's a lot to be said about that, that adaptation to a stressor. And I think the same applies for exercise, that, you know, these things may start off feeling very, very difficult for people if they've not done them in the past. But I think it's just ultimately so very important that we stick to it and just try and get over that barrier of it feeling difficult.
Yeah.
I don't know, actually, saying that exercise ever feels easy when you're doing it intensely enough, but certainly it becomes more enjoyable. That's for certain. But so for anyone with any of these techniques or anything that I mentioned, it's also worth just adding, just start very slowly, because the last thing I want is for people to be put off.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're going to jump straight into the sea and it's ice cold, you're probably not going to want to even attempt a cold shower.
Yeah, absolutely. And on top of which, if you give your body that much of a shock, it's not good for you. So just take it easy. Yeah. Yeah. And SAD, I mean, those daylight lamps are great for people if you have SAD, if you suffer from SAD, seasonal affective disorder. And but, you know, the morning sunlight, if you can get out at this time of year, middle of winter, not so easy. In Scotland here, we tend to, if you're going to work, you tend to go to work in the dark and come home in the dark, you know. Yeah. So it's not quite so easy, but see what you can do. Yeah.
Yeah, and just, I think if that's the case, just make sure, even like the weekends, that you're trying to get some sort of daylight exposure.
Yeah.
I think it's just a huge problem, especially in the sort of far northern and southern hemispheres where we're just not getting as much daylight.
Yeah.
I wonder what the effect would be if businesses in the UK were to implement these daylight lamps at desks.
I think that would be a great idea.
I would love to see the effect that had on productivity,
yeah,
sick days, mood, happiness, contentment. I think it would make a huge difference.
Yeah. Instead of sitting under fluorescent lights,
worth a try.
Absolutely.
The other thing I think you mentioned, actually, which is worth just touching on, is being out in nature.
Mm.
Every day I will try at some point to go for a run in nature somewhere. And it's not because I love running or I love the physiological and fitness adaptations that come from running. It's because I like a feeling of being outside and in nature and getting some more steps in. And so a very easy win for your overall health, well-being, physique and mood is get outside and walk.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not hitting that recommended daily 10,000 step count, arguably that's an even easier win than starting to carve out time for exercise, structured exercise, I mean.
Yeah.
So, you know, whenever we're giving people advice on their exercise regimes, the first question is always, are you getting enough steps in? Because that's such an easy win. And in terms of just ability and injury management, nearly everyone is able to sort of carve that time in, or certainly carve that exercise in.
And if you live somewhere like me, where you've got very steep alleyways going down towards the shore, going up and down those is a damned good workout.
yeah. For people, I guess, if anyone's listening and they struggle to find something they enjoy with regards to exercise, then start walking. Mm. Start with walking because it's a very easy win and it's super low risk.
Yeah, it is. Well, Chris, we're coming to the end of our conversation now, and I want to just get in where people get in touch with you, and because I know you run retreats, you've got you work in Spain, and just tell me a little bit more about, you know, your website and everything else.
Yeah, so you can find us at www.palmrockretreats.com. That's PALM Rock Retreats. And so we run some holistic wellness retreats, health and fitness retreats, either in Sotogrande in Spain, which is on the southern tip of Spain. And effectively, we do these either 4, 7, or 10-day experiential escapes where people come and we'll help carve in these principles of wellness and happiness, along with real bespoke exercise and nutrition relative to whatever their goals are. So we do this for individuals, groups, businesses, families. And we started them over the last year. They've done incredibly well. We've been super busy, and it's an absolute pleasure to run as a business, as I'm sure you can imagine.
I can. I'm sure it is.
That's actually why I'm over in the US right now. We're looking at another location on the West Coast here. So
wonderful. All places with lots of sun. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a very deliberate business strategy from me.
Yeah.
You know, I've always struggled with SAD, and so it's this whole concept of sunlight and warm weather works very well for my mood.
Well, brilliant. And I'm sure it will work well for loads of other people's moods as well. Chris,
if anyone has any questions or needs any advice or elaborating on any of these points, I'm happy to chat with them personally.
Brilliant.
They just DM me at ChrisWharton1 on Instagram, and then I'm happy to. It's obviously quite a nuanced topic, and if anyone needs any more advice, I'm happy to help.
I love it. Thank you so much, Chris. That's brilliant. So, yeah, do get in touch with Chris if you want to speak more about your own health and well-being. And, yeah, let's and maybe you'll head off to Spain or somewhere else and take part in one of Chris's retreats, which would be fantastic, and get lots of sunshine. Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome, JJ. Very good to see you again, as always.
And it was good to see Chris too. Do check out the website, palmrockretreats.com, if you're up for a five-star treat in a beautiful part of Spain to reset your fitness and well-being. If nothing else, the sun-filled pictures will give you a real boost on a cold wintry day. I hope Chris has encouraged you to take action, but with achievable goals that will leave you happy and satisfied. Let us know. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook as The Practical Alchemist, or on my website, jjsalchemy.com. And you can download this show from the Alchemy 101 page here on ukhealthradio.com. And remember that now you can find UK Health Radio's podcast channel wherever you listen to your favourites. So to find this show, just search for Alchemy 101. And if you like what you hear, why not check out our sister publication, Health Triangle Magazine? You'll find out how to access that at ukhealthradio.com too. For now, though, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale. Until next time on Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio.